trouble, see, I'm home.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. I am your co-host, Erica.
And I'm Lucy.
And we have a special guest today. This is a fun interview for us, just given all the information that we kind of take from you, really, is Michael T. Mooney from the Paper Moon Tumblr page. Thank you for joining us from New Jersey.
Well, thank you for asking me. I heard you were talking about me. And I thought, well, I better tell them I know they're there.
The elusive paper moon. See,
I'm so glad you heard us.
You heard us and you saw. Yeah, listen, he sees a lot of our, maybe photos that we take from the page. He's like, I know those shots. I took those shots. So.
Those screenshots. Yes, mm-hmm. They turn up in the weirdest places sometimes and in some really prestigious places. I just found a couple of my screenshots were credited to me in a book about stage design. I was totally shocked. You know, I have spies. They report to me and tell me, do you know?
Now, is it just you that runs this page or is it you and a team or you are the team?
It's just me.
I guess because, listen, if you put anything in Google having to do with I Love Lucy and maybe the I Love Lucy show, you are maybe one or number two search result. So anyone who's looked for Lucy stuff, it's you. So you are the fountain of information.
Well, I mean, what I like to say what I do is I'm sort of like the Lucypedia. I collate all this information. I do the research and I put it in a format that's, I hope, readable and referenceable. But I don't do any, those screenshots don't belong to me. I took them and I put them up there because I think visual media needs some sort of visual reference. You can't talk about a television show without seeing images. You can't know that everybody knows what you're talking about. And plus we're a visual society, so we like to see what the people are talking about. And I also do most of the facts, almost all the facts that I collate for you and for the Tumblr readers are from other sources. I'm not writing a scholarly thing, so I don't cite all the time. Except when I really take something specific, then I'll say thanks to such and such.
And we do our best to always credit because, you know, a lot of the information does come from you.
Just wondering when he started it.
Oh,
that would be our next question, but sorry.
No, that's all right. Because you know what? I thought you might ask me that. So I had to look it up because I'm just like, haven't you always been doing this? And it's not the case. I started in 2015 in the spring and I was writing a Facebook post based on what was the rerun that day on Hallmark Channel. Remember, they used to run them on the Hallmark Channel in the morning. So I would get out my computer and go, meanwhile, on I Love Lucy, and I'd like type out a couple of trivia things about the thing. So in case anybody was watching at the same time.
Is this trivia stuff that was just already in your mind?
Well, I have been a Lucy fan since birth. Okay. And so a lot of it was, and I've read a lot of the books and there was a lot in there.
Yeah.
But at that point, I had not dedicated myself to the research of being complete. I was just saying, oh, this episode, this and this and this. So in it is Facebook. So you don't get a terrible big chunk of time. You don't want to, people won't read it. Yeah. So I was just doing an episode. When I got to 20 of those entries, I thought maybe there's a life in this outside of Facebook. So I found Tumblr. And the reason I chose Tumblr out of all the blogging sites is because it allowed an image and a text and an image and a text and that you could read along in that format when a lot of them just gathered all the images here or all the text over here, which I think is a little disorienting if you're not familiar with the material. So I chose Tumblr and that was in 2015, and now we are at, and I looked this up too, 1,840 blog posts as of today.
Wow.
And it's slowed down considerably because I have written about every episode of I Love Lucy, 100 of the 120 episodes of My Favorite Husband, all the Lucy shows, all the Here's Lucy's and all the Life of Lucy's. Plus, that leaves a lot of space for other things, you know, like just random articles or summaries or stuff.
Movies.
movies. I don't do a lot of the movies because in the beginning, Lucy's movies were not driven by Lucy, but were driven by other creators. So she is basically not the creative force behind it. And a lot of them, she's in like for 3 seconds or 4 seconds, and then you blink and you miss her. So I decided early on I was going to be, I was raised by the boob tube, as they say. Mm-hmm. So I was going to concentrate on her television. And I like to think I've gotten the bulk of it, but there's always more.
Oh, absolutely. Down to things that we, you don't even think about because you're watching them perform. So they're the center focal point. Right. But meanwhile, Michael's like, you see that picture behind her? And then there's a wall behind that. And behind that is another wall. Well, that wall was made by... like so much information that it's, the sponsors during each episode or what's going on in their personal lives, all of that. You said you gathered that from books, from interviews.
We have this miracle gift in front of us called the internet, which mm-hmm. is an infinite resource that when I was growing up, you had to go to the library and read. But nowadays it's pretty much all there. If you're discerning and you pick from several sources and get a consensus when you're going to say something. I'm very cautious about saying something I don't know is probably true. And I don't generally use my opinion. My opinion is really not factored in.
Yeah.
Some of the later ones I would give in one sentence, this is my favorite because, but on I Love Lucy, I never thought to do that because I wanted to do like, these are documents of history as well as documents of the art of television and comedy. So like the references, what do they mean to a modern audience? And then when Lucy says something and, references a movie star or a product, do we have any kind of reference point to know what the heck she's talking about? And I wanted to provide that. Then it got into like, she uses a such and such waffle iron and it was made from 19 such and
that's
such.
That's her favorite because with the ivy plate sets and the teapots and the cups. And she's just like, that's
today
her favorite.
I wrote a little bit about vinegar cruets.
Yes.
And the two prominent vinegar cruets that are in the Ricardo's world. And, I'm not still the first to visit this information, So I kind of just put it together with some neat images and make it like one-stop shopping for people who are interested in that. That's basically what I've been doing. And I'm not just for I Love Lucy. And I know there's a hardcore fandom for I Love Lucy, but Lucille Ball had an impressive body of work.
And oh, yes.
I think it enriches it to know the basis of it, My Favorite Husband, and what came after I Love Lucy, which is all her other series. They all fold in on each other. And that's a fascinating thing to take a deep dive into the work of one artist. And that's basically what Paper Moon Loves Lucy is. Not Paper Moon Loves I Love Lucy, which mm-hmm. he does. Mm-hmm. It's Paper Moon Loves Lucy.
Yeah.
Lucille Ball and whatever incarnation she's in.
Yeah. And I love that you hit on sometimes the history. And when I mean history, I mean like actual history behind like maybe the interracial marriage that they had and how difficult it was for them to get the show going. Mm-hmm. We talk about that all the time because it's such, you have to understand what they had to overcome to even get this, history changing show off the ground.
Yeah, there's been many sources that have written about how Desi broke barriers and insisted on doing things that were out of the box and that were not traditional.
Yeah.
Television was in its infancy then. So, when people said you can't do that, it's just that it hadn't been done. And Desi was able to say, well, we're going to do it. And he was almost always right and got his way and things worked out so that he set the precedent. But he was at the precipice of a new era of visual media. The one thing I enjoy reading about and writing about a lot is how these episodes live in their own time period. Like we can enjoy them today. Why is that? That an episode that was written 70 years ago and performed by people who for the most part are no longer with us, it still makes us laugh. It still makes us smile. It still makes us think. And some of the things I like to talk about are the things that we think, I couldn't do that today. I couldn't say that. I couldn't speak that. and how television has changed in that
most of our episode recaps that we do, we touch on how dated
at least one thing.
Yes, and she says, I mean, it's so dated, and I think it's except when people watch it today, it's accepted as, oh, it's a 1950s frame of mind. That joke, you know, the spanking of Lucy in the kitchen, that sort of thing, would not go over. Twitter would be in a frenzy over something like that. You know, how dare they? So
the role of women, the role of minorities in television has changed. They would make jokes about Asians and the people of color. You know, like a Native American Lucy in the Indian show. That, you know, things like that that you just couldn't do today. And when you know a little bit about the 50s and the place people were in, it doesn't excuse that. But the fact is that that was acceptable then. And with, it was coming from a deep tradition of vaudeville that buffooned and satirized almost everything out there, no matter what it was. They, no holds barred.
Yeah.
So Lucy was trying to move through that to a more realistic comedy, but there were some things that kind of dragged her into the time period that she was living in. I don't know if she was a visionary. I think she was a woman of her time more than anything else.
And fearless.
Yeah, as she would probably tell you. Mm-hmm. She's not funny. She's fearless. She's brave.
She's brave.
And she was pretty much. If she thought it would entertain you or make you laugh, she would do it. And some of the things now, it's like, send in my stunt double. I'm not doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As you know, from doing the research, most of the funny things we laugh at were painstakingly rehearsed. They're not spontaneous, or as Ricky would say, espontaneous.
Testimony. We just did that one.
Spontaneous testimony. I listened to your take on the courtroom. I listened to your take on the operetta just recently, where you gave me a shout out. Thank you very much. Yes. My favorite episode, by the way, is the operetta because of my theatrical background. You know, the thing even is with the favorite is like, is it the best episode? I don't know, but it's my favorite.
Yeah.
Every one of them tends to have a little something, something to take away that makes you smile, makes you think, and makes you just glad you watched.
Well, much like the Scotland one is very well done, but it's my very least favorite.
You're not alone.
I can't watch that.
Erica, I know that every time I turn around, that one is being like, criticized, but as a theater person, I can tell you that is amazingly written and daringly performed. To take that, what also happened with the Scotland episode, and I think a lot of people forget this, is when it went into syndication, the opening few minutes were cut out, where Lucy goes to bed after seeing a Broadway musical, and she dreams in the musical comedy format. So when you just launch into Kildunan, and it's like there in your face, you go, what is this? Where are they? What happened? Why are the sets look like that? So you're taken out of context. And then not everybody loves musicals, you know.
Yeah. So I really like that episode.
Yeah, it's her one of her favorites, I think.
I do love that because I'm a musical theater person and I get all those references that, I mean, that we're probably satirizing a musical called Brigadoon. That was on Broadway in 1948. And I think it went to London even later than that. So it's not, it might be one that the Ricardos would have seen, you know, and there's a lot of little things. They buy a toy dragon for little Ricky. And that's why they imagine the Mertzes as dragons. So if you cut all that, and you really have no frame of context, mostly at the end, you see Lucy waking up and hitting Ricky with the pillow. Yeah. And you go, what the heck is all that about? Yeah. So
She doesn't have a good track record with dreams in I Love Lucy, just like Lucy doesn't like the one where he's, you know, he leaves her for the dancer and it makes her so uncomfortable. But it's the storyline, you know, makes it.
Did you notice though how they age the little Ricky character all through it?
And yes.
Even the spectators at the musical performance of Ricky and Carlotta. Yeah. Also age. They also get older and older so that the fandom gets older and the call board has more performances on it. So these things are kind of interesting to me. They fascinate me.
The attention to detail is...
There's a real... The writers are... Lucy never stopped thanking her writers, and rightfully so. I mean, she was funny. She could take things and make them funny, but if she had been given a blank page, I think she would have been at a loss, you know?
Right.
She thrived on the things that their writers wrote. That's why I love My Favorite Husband so much, is you can see, or hear rather, where the roots of all this comedy came from, because it was the same writers that.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, they're hard to track.
There's a lot of overlap when you really start listening to, you know, My Favorite Husband, and you've watched all the Lucy shows. There's a good deal of overlap, and you go, oh, I remember that. And oh, that's in this episode. And
sometimes the titles are the same and sometimes they're different. And when you're listening along, you go, this sounds very familiar.
What's interesting is I don't think you have a lot of shows that has a huge amount of scripts already prepared where you just do some tweaking because, again, it's the same writers and it's the same concept. But I don't think a lot of shows have that. You're starting from scratch and they're just taking, you know, from the radio show and maybe tweaking it, making it.
Well, that's because we were in that period of time, they were converting things to a new medium. And almost everybody in show business was looking to take what they had already done on the stage or in the radio and move it to television and capitalize in that way. So you'll find people like Ed Wynn of Vaudevillian, who also had a stage show and a radio show, moved into television. And all these other performers that Lucy's peers were also doing that. Lucy was doing it in a scripted situation comedy, which is vastly different than what most of the others did, which was kind of sketch comedy. So they would appear in front of a curtain and then they would do a sketch and then they'd have a song and this variety format. Lucy didn't do that. She decided, I'm going to create a world where this woman, this middle-class housewife lives that is unlike me. And that's the thing they tried very hard to do, is make sure you realize that Lucy wasn't Lucille Ball, the glamorous movie star.
No.
But she was Lucy Ricardo, a show business wannabe housewife and mother in, you know, like a drab New York apartment building. And that's the world she wanted for her character. And therefore we rooted for her, because that was most of us anyway back in the 50s.
Yeah, and there was a lot of irony, I think, in that, because I think in the show, the premise was to make and elevate Ricky the star. I mean, we've talked about it in our episodes where he's just lounging in a suit. He's lounging. He's always dressed up. You will not catch him just in sweats and a t-shirt. That's not his style. You know,
it's very rare. There's like one or two where he's,
and it stands out.
It does, for sure.
And I think people did dress up when they go out.
Right.
Even staying in, I don't think the idea of people lounging in like their house dress or something, except if you wanted to show somebody who was working, like overalls. There's one line that I find absolutely brilliant, is when Ethel has to escort Lucy downtown to get the loving cup off her hand.
Oh, yes.
And she says, Lucy, I've never been on a subway in my blue jeans and I'm not going to start now. So in 1955, you couldn't even get on a subway with your blue jeans without being embarrassed.
And she says, with this thing on my head, the last thing anyone's going to be looking at are your blue jeans.
Well, that's the joke, yes. But the idea is like,
yeah,
that's a real thing to a woman. She would put on a dress to go downtown on a subway, with something like, you know, we wouldn't even give two thoughts to today. People dressed up to go to the theater. So, you know, when you see Fred sitting with his shirt buttoned up to his neck while he's sitting around in his living room reading the papers, you realize that this was a different time. And not that people did that, really.
Yeah.
Probably they let their hair down once in a while, but they were on television.
Yeah.
And,
you know. Right. But yeah, well, showing that image is always one of being put together, which is why they always bring out the example of airport attire, how it's different from 1950s to today, people in their sandals, you know, flip-flops and sweats, where back then it was a whole thing, you know, even flight attendants, you know, stewardesses were, you know, much more dressed up. From your page, though, I know that you have it. I mean, it's very updated. I saw that you posted Leslie. What's his name? He just passed.
Oh, yes. Jordan.
Leslie Jordan. Yes. And there was, of course, a Lucy reference. And I see that you always have a Lucy cross reference with something that's happening in the news, or, you know, there's always a connection there. What is your favorite thing to write about in the Lucy world on your page?
Oh God. Well, on that page, I only write about the Lucy world, even though I have my own special niches in other areas. I'm not completely Lucy blinders on. But
what a great world, though, that would be.
I've done all the episodic television things. Now I do enjoy, and lately, sadly, it's become more obituaries and tying people into the Lucy world that have left us, and saying, did you know they worked for Desi Lu in all of these projects, and Lucy was there. It just shows you the breadth of reach that Desi Lu and Lucy and Desi had in this world, when some person you didn't even know about, who's 90 years old, has worked for them. So I've done a lot of that. I don't think I love it. What I used to love a lot is drawing out these little details that thrill me, like, again, bloopers and gaffes and things, like you can see the backstage. And, you know, there were a lot of those, and some of them were cleaned up for the DVD and some of them were not. Then there's also things I love when there's referential comments, you know, like that happens more in the later series, because when Lucy, you know, is hanging up a poster and it's a movie that she was in, and, you know, they make a little.
You see some of those nuggets.
With the kids. Yes. I love that.
The epitome of that is the Here's Lucy episode where everyone enters a Lucille Ball lookalike contest. When they just go balls to the wall, excuse the expression, about the self-referential world. I remember there was one, a Dean Martin special with Lucy when they went to Vegas. And she's riding along the escalator in the hotel and she's passing the movie stars' pictures. And there's a picture of Lucille Ball. And she just gives a little knowing wink and keeps going. It's like,
I love that.
Those things thrill me. And I think if I write about what I like, there might be somebody else out there liking it too. So,
yeah, there's this one Here's Lucy episode where Kim is putting up a bunch of movie stars.
That's the one I was referring to.
Yeah. And I love when she just like holds it up and just like, it's kind of like, not this one.
That sort of thing tickles me, because that wasn't, they would not do that. They did it obliquely in some of the episodes of I Love Lucy, but it was very, very subtle. Like they would say,
there was like one where there was a magazine of her like on the rack behind them, of her like the full page magazine or something. But yeah, it's much smaller.
It says story of Lucy's life is on the cover, and it's like those things that were really just trying to pay back their supporters, their writers, the people that wrote about them and it gave them the career that they had. So those little references are fun. Yeah. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of those, but you have to listen closely. They're not as blatant as, say, the Philip Morris sponsorship.
Or the I Love Lucy episodes where they had the Look magazines and it's them on the cover and she's pregnant and she's reading about herself. And, you know, you have to really pick up on that. But I think to your point where it's, you know, she's noticing herself, I think either her autobiography or a book on her life, she knew that she was on her way to stardom or already there, is when Hollywood, you know, casting agents were looking for a Lucille Ball type. And, you know, she was it. And this was in the 30s, 40s, when she was just starting off. And that's when, you know, you've made it, when someone's looking for your type.
And they're still looking for Lucille Ball.
Yeah. They tried couldn't find it. She's amazing. The Ricardos, but
I do appreciate all you guys' interest in my site. Just a note of that I may be moving the entire site off of Tumblr to another place.
Oh, okay.
Because Tumblr has put in a rule recently that non-registered Tumblr, if you're not registered with Tumblr, you can't view my material. And that's disheartening for me. Because I would always like send people, go look at this, go look at that, and Facebook and Twitter. But now when they click on it, they get, you must register to be a Tumblr user. And that's a turnoff for them.
Yeah, it is.
So seeing the writing on the wall, I'm looking into now, and I've taken certain steps. I can't announce it yet where and when, but
I think you said you were switching apartments.
Swishing. Swishing. Yes, that was one of the swishing posts. Apartments. I put. Swishing apartments. Yes. Apartments.
We won't
and,
swish.
So it'll be soon. It'll be over there. I just have okay. to get the lay of the land and know.
Yeah.
But for right yeah. now, if joining Tumblr is free, if you crave that information, you don't have to pay.
Well, once we know what it is, we will most definitely, you know, post it on our on our Instagram on and our Facebook so people are aware.
You know, I'm so shocked sometimes when people like you say, oh, I've read your blog, or I see that I've been quoted or credited.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, it's just writing for me. I didn't know people were really reading. And it's a thrill to see that. I really do appreciate it. So it's 7 years. I'm glad people are still using it, you know, and looking at it and going, that's interesting. Or how do you know all that? I just put it all in a package.
And yeah, it's a Lucipedia, like you said. I mean, it's we have referenced it to each other so many times because it's just, you know, you go to other websites and you wonder, you know, chicken and the egg thing, because it's almost exactly the same. So I'm thinking, is it them from them? But if all of you people are saying the same thing, then it must be right. So I'm just going to go with it right. and hope that it's right.
Well, I don't indulge in idle gossip. And if I find something that looks spurious and doesn't look like it's real.
Yeah.
And you have to remember, too, that when Lucy was a young movie star, the publicists would make up all sorts of fantastic stories and print them in the newspaper. And when I was doing research in newspapers, I would see these stories, Lucy shooting alligators in the Amazon from an airplane that she was flying herself. And I'm thinking, she was not. She was back in Jamestown.
She was trying to get onto the USS Constitution is what she was trying to do. She was not trying to shoot any alligators.
So you have to be able to say, okay, that was BS back 1938.
Yeah.
And it's still BS today.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to feed you that sort of thing. But I will couch it as if this report from a publicist said Lucy did this and Lucy did that. So hopefully when we do quote each other, we are quoting the right thing. And if you have any doubts, Lucy Arnaz can probably set you straight.
We're trying to get her to set us straight.
What?
We're trying to get her to set us straight.
I publish, and sometimes she'll set me straight. And sometimes she'll say, oh, Michael Mooney said it better. So just go.
Okay, so I'm curious about that. The interactions you've had with either the family or people who've known her, or are you in that world? Do you know people? I need to know these things.
Not at all. I mean, I used to work in the theater and I knew some of the people that Lucy knew. I met Eddie Bracken, who did Too Many Girls with Lucy and Desi. I had met Ann Miller, who was in movies with Lucy and Desi. And they were in sort of their little backyard barbecue pact, you know, they would meet for social reasons and sometimes they work together. So that's as close as I've gotten. And Lucy Arnaz only through Facebook, because she's been so generous about opening up her Facebook. Just, I think in the same way her mother opened up television and shared her life, she's doing it with social media. Even though sometimes it's a trial, she's been trying to stick it out on Facebook. So we've connected on that. But I don't really know anybody like in the inside world, the family, but most of them are approachable. And, you know, if you come at them, not like a rabid fan, but like, you know, an interested party, they'll talk to you, really.
Yeah, I think we came at her trying to speak to her, perhaps
at the
wrong timing, because she was in the midst of promoting being the Ricardos and the documentary. So who are we when Good Morning America is
right
on her phone? You know,
that's the thing, you know, Lucy probably gets it from all sides.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time Lucy has her own career and she has her own things to attend. She has a family, she has a career of her own. So being her parents' caretaker is important to her, but it can't occupy 24/7 of her time, although I'm sure it does some days. It's an unenviable position to be in. And, you know, Desi Jr. has taken sort of a back seat, and Lucy has been the face of Desi Lu 2 and representing her parents' interests. So I think she's done a great job of it. But yeah, she's a busy camper. So
we ask this of most of the people that we interview. you know, Lucy's always been around. She's always in the background, no matter 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, 70 years of the show, but I'm saying always somewhere it's playing. But just now, pandemic years has been the big resurgence of Lucy with the documentary, the show, not the show, the Being the Ricardos, all of that. Mm-hmm. What crossed your mind when you saw the wave of that coming all of a sudden, even though Lucy always existed?
Well, I was thrilled because, you know, as a Lucy fan, you go through years when her popularity wanes a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't mean she's never been gone, but
yeah.
When there's a major movie or documentary about somebody, it gets a lot of attention. And unfortunately, a lot of the attention for Being the Ricardos was aimed in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I think it frustrated a lot of people, including me.
Yeah.
That they weren't looking at it as a wonderful opportunity, but rather a vexing casting choice. And I just felt like this is not your call. Just get on board or stay silent, because this is going to happen. And if it didn't happen, you'd miss it. So whether you liked it or you didn't like it, that's not really the point. So I was thrilled to see Being the Ricardos. Of course, Being the Ricardos was a wonderful film on its own. It used the truth in a different order. Mm-hmm. Things really didn't happen in the order that the film laid it out, but most of it did really happen. And I think in a way that was satisfying as a movie. And I think Lucy would approve of that. I think I just see Lucy with the script. Now put that over here. Now put that over here, because it makes more sense that way. Because life, you know, George S. Kaufman said, God writes lousy theater. And he does. I mean, we have to put the events in the order that we want to see them most satisfactorily unfold. And that doesn't always happen the way life unfolds, you know?
Yeah, much like the creative liberties you take, it's with the eye of making sure you're going to keep an audience's attention. Because if you were to really watch a reality show, you'd probably be bored and, putting it all in a small container of 2 hours and making it much more entertaining, I think, is probably what they were going for, but it didn't hit for a lot of people that are, you know, big Lucy fans. The documentary sure did, though.
Yeah, the documentary was quite good. And as Lucy Arnaz would tell you herself, I don't think it was quite as good as her documentary.
Yeah, was Emmy winning, right?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go. I mean, it was a different thing. But it was so close to her that the emotion was literally on the screen. I mean, you could watch those clips and the music that was associated with it. And I could tear up now just thinking about it, like those images of Lucy frolicking in the pool with her grandchildren and stuff. It's just Lucy Arnaz had a real instinct on how to put that film together. I think Amy Poehler did a magnificent job. But it was a little more cut and dried, with a little more of Amy's wit, having the commentary in and out of it. But it was a nice love letter to Lucy. And I don't think we can ever have too much of that.
That's true. And I think, have you ever gone to the Lucy Days, Jamestown Festival, all those things? Or you kind of just...
Yes, I was to Jamestown once for the Lucy Fest days. And then once I went, during the pandemic, I said, oh, pandemic, schmandemic, I'm going to Jamestown. I was just feeling caged in. I thought, I'm going to drive myself up to New York, because I'm in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It's about 7 hours. And I drove myself up and I revisited the Comedy Museum, which wasn't open the first time I went. The Comedy Museum is amazing. And Lucy is an integral part of that. And then there's the Lucy, the Lucille Ball. I'm drinking from the cup, the Lucy Desi Museum in Jamestown, which is an entity unto itself, though associated with it. You know, I know you guys are not on the East Coast, but if you ever get up that way, it's really worth a trip. And you, as fans, you will not be bored, I can tell you that.
I think here in California, you have, you know, the little gems that are in Palm Springs, some of them in Beverly Hills. There was maybe... I don't know, 5 miles down from where I live now was Desi Arnaz's former horse breeding ranch in Corona. So I went and looked at that. And it's just little nuggets like that, but there's nothing, I'm sure, like look right where she grew up and where everybody kind of gathers for that.
Yeah, her grave is there as well as the whole family and the two museums. And it's just like, and then you can go on the tour of her childhood home to the park where she grew up, where the Lucy statues are. It's like, there's just so much. So I've been twice, and I had the time, I went with a Lucy fan the first time that I worked with. We used to have Lucy parties at work. It's Lucy's birthday, cake in the green room. We'd have parties. And I went with a fan. Last time I went alone, and I was glad I did, because I wanted very specifically to see the Comedy Museum at my own pace. And it's a place you can spend the full day. And it's not just Lucy, it's all, but you have to realize that Lucy influenced almost all of the people that you see in that Comedy Museum.
Yeah.
So Jamestown is the perfect location.
Okay, so you've got Paper Moon now, and you mentioned that you were in theater. So what, you know, Paper Moon is a project you do on the side, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, so tell us a little bit about maybe your theater, if you want. Like, for that, I'd be interested in hearing a little bit about what you did there.
I was an actor up until 2001 or two. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, I think my skills maybe lie behind the scenes. And I started working as a director and an administrator in the theater. And I got hired by New Jersey's Paper Mill Playhouse in 1994, a Tony Award winning regional theater. And as any Jersey kid knows, that's the place, if you're a theater kid, you want to go, because mm-hmm. it's the largest regional theater in our state. And it is a producer of musicals, many of which have gone on to Broadway. And so I was with them for 16 years. And I left there after I had a couple of health scares. I had a couple of strokes which in 2011. So I just kept my hand in, talking about musicals, writing a little bit about musicals and plays. But I'm not in the theater anymore. I'm now I work from home doing videos for the blind, translating videos for the blind, which I learned in the theater. And I work with the Kennedy Center on their projects sometimes. So all in all, I'm semi-retired, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
At age 60, I'm semi-retired. I live in a condo on the boardwalk in Atlantic City, overlooking the ocean. And for a Jersey boy, where else is there to go? That's the epitome of, I look at it, the boardwalk in Atlantic City. I even wrote if you can Google it, if you can find it on Broadway World, I wrote an article about Jersey and Lucy and how New Jersey and Lucy intersected.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that. Those
little teeny details about the Garden State and the Queen of Comedy and how the two sometimes met. I'm very proud of both, being a Lucy fan and being a Jersey boy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your friends and family probably are very well aware of that, right?
Yeah. In fact, that I think they've given up giving me any sort of Lucy stuff anymore. It's like, he has that. He has that.
Oh, so tell us about that. What is your most prized Lucy possession, or the thing that you love the most, really?
Well, I'll tell you something, Erica. I used to do some light collecting, but I was never had the pocketbook to really splurge on the real wonderful older things. I had a lot of the dolls and the plates and all that stuff. And then, around 2013 or 14, I needed money because medical bills are expensive. And I worked in the arts, and I just sold it all. And I never looked back. I sold it all to a collector. I got a nice tidy sum, but I never looked back. And now I have a few little things on the shelves behind me. But other than that, I don't buy collectibles. I don't buy videos. All the stuff that you read, I doubt I bought maybe one video set of the Lucy collections, because I'm more into experiences and that sort of thing than in things, than I'm going to have to dust.
Yeah, and it's like you mentioned, I think it's so much more, to me, interesting, not just like the dolls and things that are mass produced, but more like this is Lucille Ball's book that she had in her office when she ran Desilu. See, something like that would be, you know, just.
Well, those would mean a heck of a lot, but they would also mean a heck of a lot of, you know, money.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, the Paper Moon Loves Lucy blog doesn't pay all that
it's
much.
Not monetized. Now, what does Paper Moon mean? What is
Paper Moon? Paper Moon, first of all, my surname, as you know, is Mooney. Mm-hmm. And I worked at the Paper Mill Playhouse, and I worked at the Paper Mill when you needed to have an email address and a screen name and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I took paper and moon and put them together. And so I became attached to this Paper Moon, you know, alias, and I've just used it ever since. So that's where Paper Moon comes from.
And one fact.
That's good. I've always wondered that.
That you came across, because we're always like, did you read on Paper Moon that, you know, so-and-so, what is one fact that you, from all of these years, was it 7-8 years that you've had this whole Tumblr page that you didn't know, that you were just shocked to find out, Lucy related?
Just one.
Yeah.
Well yeah, just, you know, this one.
Just one.
Just one. Just one.
He's like, everything I wrote.
Oh, you know, it's true, because, you know, there's so much out there about Lucy. And you're always discovering something.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I make a deep dive connection, I kind of feel like an excitement about it. But it's been 7 years, so I've had so many of those. But I think one of the most interesting tidbits of trivia, let's say that, mm-hmm. if you want to put it in that thing, mm-hmm. that I discovered was that in the Lucy show, after Jimmy Garrett's character of Jerry Carmichael was written off, to go to boarding school in California, Lucy gets a letter from him and it's signed Jimmy. And everybody said to her, but Lucille, your son's name on the show. No, it was Jerry. Right. She insisted that it would be was Jimmy, and she would not be dissuaded from that. And that's what went to film. They all just went, okay, you're the boss. And they let her call her own son Jimmy. Yeah. It was Jerry. Yeah. And I thought, well, that speaks volumes about our Lucy. When she had her mind set on something, mm-hmm. it's not going to be changed.
Well, it's like in the documentary, they show her behind the scenes. This is when she started running it herself. And maybe Desi was still involved, I'm not sure. But, you know, she would be taking the lighting very serious and, you know, where everybody's mm-hmm. standing very serious. So you could hear, of course, the voice change also had something to do with how stern she came across, but I could see her just saying, it's going to be Jimmy. And everyone's just like, all right.
But you could also see those other people in the background going, okay,
we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. But she, you know, Lucille Ball technically is only credited with 2 directing. One, a co-direction of one of the Here's Lucy episodes, and one failed pilot called Bungle Abbey, which featured Gail Gordon. Mm-hmm. Those 2 things are her only directing credit. Mm-hmm. But those who know Lucy knew she directed almost everything she was in. She would not hesitate to call cut or stop or let's do this again. Mm-hmm. They weren't in the light. And if she didn't feel she could do that, she would talk around it and make them think she needed to do it as an artist again or in a different way to fulfill what the script was. So that is directing. And so our Lucy had a single-mindedness that made this career and this work what we love today. And we can only say, well, she must have known what she was doing.
Oh, and I love imagining, and I think that's what made this show and everything she touched were, for the most part, you know, so greatly put together, is that the comedy she took so serious, you know, and when you watch her on interviews, she's not Lucy Ricardo. She doesn't perform. Mm. I mean, you say, you know, go, she's Lucy Ricardo. You say cut, she's back to Lucille Ball. And we spoke about it when we did the MAME movie review, is that she was trying so hard to run away from the Lucy Ricardo because all the reviews then were harsh on that movie, and so always trying to mirror what Lucy Ricardo was. And she wasn't that, you know. Mm. We also spoke of, Lucy has a lot of information about Bob Crane and how he tried to remove himself from the character from Hogan's Heroes. And it's just, I think that bothered her to some extent to always try to come back to that goofy character that she just wasn't.
Yeah. No, the Lucy that, you know, we knew, she was a perfectionist, and she was, I think that's one of the things that being the Ricardos did brilliantly. Yeah. I mean, yes, it may have been hyped up a little bit, but the way she dissected that scene between Fred and Ethel and Fred and Ethel fight, mm-hmm. and said, nope, do it this way. No, we'll do it that way. And let's, I doubt she called them to the set at midnight.
At 3 o'clock in the morning, I think they went.
You know, get down here. I have an idea.
Yeah.
That probably didn't happen.
Yeah.
But the idea that Lucy knew how things should work and put them in motion that way, even to the point of taking the director's job out of their hands. And the directors kind of knew it. Mm-hmm. They put their names on the episodes. They picked up the paycheck. And some of them, sometimes they said, okay, that's enough. I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And she would replace them. Yeah. And sometimes they came back to the fold and sometimes they didn't. Yeah. So it was an understanding she had with these people, because she needed them as much as they needed her. And so it was a mutual, let's get this done kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the parts that, much to what you said, that they were a family in the way she respected those writers, because literally her every episode was in their hands as to what she was going to do. Yeah. The way that they were portrayed in being the Ricardos was a little almost uneasy to watch, because from maybe documentaries or stories, you hear that their friendship was a little much more endearing than what came across in being the Ricardos.
Well, first of all, you're right. It was kind of like, oh, that's a little prickly.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, but I do think, again, we have to allow that this is a story and we want to make even the supporting characters watchable to a certain extent, give the actors something to act. And then, you know, hindsight is usually polarized. It's either you look at it with rose-colored glasses, or somebody will say, she was the biggest you-know-what that I ever met. And there are a few of those, too. So the truth probably lies somewhere in the center. Mm-hmm. But that centered ground doesn't always make good theater, good drama. Yeah. So they colored the relationships and made them a little bit more, you know, interesting. We don't know. I mean, what goes on in the writer's room of a sitcom, whatever went on in there, they produced some really amazing television that's still being imitated today.
Yeah.
And it's still watchable today, even if you choose to watch the old ones. You see Lucy plots crop up all the time.
Yes. You know? And we just interviewed the author of the children's book, of the Little Goldens book, children's book. And to me, the only thing I take, well, not the only thing, but the main thing I take away from that is introducing new generations. And you don't get that from a lot of actors, a lot of TV shows from back then. But you have preschoolers now knowing who Lucille Ball is. And to me, that's just amazing.
Yeah. And I think it's important that they look at Lucy in the context that we are now looking at her as a businesswoman, as an artist, as a real creative person, not just Lucy Ricardo, which a lot of our fellow fans just see her as that. They completely dismissed her other work, and they will call Fred and Ethel, Fred and Ethel, realizing that those two actors had lives outside of that and work. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's wonderful that, as Lucy said, wonderful that they are putting Lucy in a bigger context than just saying, okay, here's Lucy Ricardo. It's Lucille Ball, a wife, a mother, a business person who gave us, as we see daily, so many people have her to thank for her, their careers and their starts and her support.
Yeah.
And she's so still giving us all this stuff. We're sitting here talking about her.
It always baffles me. I mean, there's two or three, maybe other podcasts. I mean, it blows your mind to know the impact of someone who's been gone so long. I mean, both of them. And I did this, biography of Desi Arnaz in Spanish, because I realized when you go online, he's one of the largest Latin figures who made such a dent in television history. There isn't much in Spanish. for Desi Arnaz. And it shocked me to know that it's almost like being overlooked, you know, and it's the one thing Lucy did not want to happen. I mean, if you saw, I'm sure you've seen the Barbara Walters interview, she was very fierce in her protection of his contribution to television. And I love to see that, even though they were, you know, long divorced and all of that. Both of them.
I think that interview was key in helping us understand why they couldn't still be together.
Yeah.
She was very blunt about it.
And the loser line, still, I think.
You could see the pain that it caused her to have to leave him and have to divorce him. You could see that this arrangement with Gary was what was working for her in the moment.
Yeah.
And that she still didn't have any disregard for her ex-husband, Desi Arnaz. And she would always build him up at any opportunity. And I think she knew he was finding his direction, you know, after his association with Lucy. Mm-hmm. He didn't need to find a different direction. And I think her support meant a lot to him. So I think that interview kind of brought that home for me when I saw it. I get it now.
Yeah,
what that was. It's not black and white. There's some gray in that, you know, fittingly, black and white gray. But it's the foibles of human emotion that are not depicted in a sitcom where everything's wrapped up in 22 minutes, you know. This life was deeper and longer. And that's what people really didn't get, that these were real people in very demanding circumstances. And, you know, that's a side of the things that I don't know if I look at on my blog. So I don't want you to think you're going to get a deep dive in my blog about Lucille Ball.
And a deep love.
And her personal life.
Yeah.
We all have personal lives. We all don't want them out there. Somebody's going to dig that up.
Yeah.
I prefer to concentrate on her art and how her art touched us and went into what we call the fabric of America. And from there out to the fabric of the world, because those are little documents. They're like little documents. CBS was so smart to guard them and keep them pristine and keep them from being, you know, just sort of chopped up in a million pieces. So you, like you were saying in one of the podcasts, you can still watch all the originals on Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm. And they are beautifully restored in beautiful condition. So,
I mean, very, very nice images. I mean, like almost HD.
I think they work from the remastered copy. So, I mean, you know, I do think that Lucy, people say, oh, I missed that show. Well, it's still there. Yeah. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it didn't go anywhere. Yeah, it's still there.
It's the thing, too, people say about Lucille Ball. It's like, oh, I miss her. So sad. She's never away from us. She is there at the touch of a finger, at the click of a mouse, at the flick of a TV knob. She is there to make us laugh and make us smile. Mm-hmm. And so we never lost her. The people that lost Lucy were her family.
Yes. You know,
they
lost
her. We didn't ever lose her. And we never will, thanks to, you know, what she gave us and how she made sure it was preserved and put on film. Imagine if she didn't do that.
The Desi Arnaz decision of, I think, what did they do? Opt out for a payment cut to keep the films and then create reruns was.
Yeah. It was all about a necessity in the beginning, but the necessity proved the salvation of the show. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, he only did it so that they didn't have to travel to New York City.
Right.
And they could stay at home in California. That was, and the reruns were only to give Lucy time to have her baby. Mm-hmm. And then they became something that, oh, this could work in another context, you know, even without the baby. So these were necessities that were innovations, and then they became commonplace. And it's, you have to credit Desi for that and Lucy's support of Desi in those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of covered the main points. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if anyone is looking for any, seriously, you can put in the search bar of your page itself, any sort of, you know, vaudeville days to, was it Goldwyn days to MAME to the Kennedy Center days. And you'll find it on the Paper Moon Loves Lucy Tumblr page. It's literally all there. And we are very appreciative of that because, our podcast survives on information sites like yours, really, because I mean, we weren't there. We don't know. We can only learn so much from books. And someone has to gather it all. And that someone is you, turns out.
You did it. Yay.
Yeah, I had the free time to do it. So I did.
No, that's really, really great. So other than Paper Moon, is there any other ones that you want our audience to know about? Any other pages, any other places to find you or your work?
Well, that's a good question because I don't do this. I don't work in a vacuum. Like, I mean, there's a page that I'm pretty new to, but I have the ultimate respect for. It's called the Lucy Lounge.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. Lounge. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they get it, but it fascinates me. I've never not clicked on a Lucy Lounge and found something I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, we interviewed one of the ladies that ran that that page. And yeah, I think she is the social media manager of Lucy Arnaz, who runs the Lucy Lounge. So that's where their sources of information.
On Facebook, I was a member of a lot of the Lucy groups, and then they became a little trying on my nerves. So I narrowed it down to one, and I only stay on the one site now. So
what I love is that Lucy
daily.
Lucy fans and Lucy historians are very protective and also easily annoyed with misinformation. I just love that.
Well, some of the fans are, and they, I love it, but I would post something and then they repeat it. And I would go, well, I just said that, didn't I? And so I kind of got it. And then there was a lot of people that just write, we love Lucy. Well, yeah, that's why we're all here. So, when on Facebook, you get all these notifications. So I'm going, oh, somebody had something to add.
Yeah.
And I get there and it's some big ass meme about Lucy, blinking and like Times Square neon. And I'm going, So I just do the one.
Not worth a notification. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Where can we watch Lucy? Or have you seen this episode? Are you really asking if we've seen this episode?
When is it coming back and what channel is it on? I'm thinking, where do you live? I don't know what channel you watch.
And by where, I mean, what year are you living in?
And God bless them. We need as many fans as we can get. But there's only so many hours in the day. So I've narrowed it down to this one group that I'm active and I'm an administrator for, along with the people who founded it. They asked me, I was so flattered. And so I said, all right, I'll be an administrator. But I had to give up approving and disapproving posts because to me, there were so many, I was disapproved. I'm like, no.
There's no post left.
I'm going, that's a repeat. Don't need that. That's a negative. I don't need that.
Yeah.
So, but there are a lot of them out there. And I find I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, I'll be honest with you. When I got a call from my good friend, Eric, the librarian, who said, do you know these people are talking about you? I said, no, I didn't. Let me listen. And I love
Eric.
Your style because you are very conversational and you make it like we're sitting around having a drink, talking about Lucy, which is something that we actually did. <It's> like,
we've bored everyone around us doing that. So we just found each other on a Facebook group.
And we decided, let's talk to each other
and everyone else. Trust me, we'll find it. Like bees to honey, we'll find them.
Much success to you in the rest of your endeavors. But I have no idea which direction you're going, but you seem like you're reaching out there and doing a whole bunch of stuff. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You got to spread the word of Lucy.
Yeah, we love doing every episode and we're only season two. So we're going to be here a while. We will be on
the Vile of Lucy yet.
Yeah, so we're going to be here. We're going to be paper mooning it up for a long time.
But we need a guest host.
That would be great.
Yes. That would be. We already did your favorite episode.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You run the whole show.
Yeah. I mean, because we mix it up with interviews and we do movie reviews. Yeah. I mean, we always talk about how lucky we were. We had Keith Thibodeau in the beginning of our podcast.
I don't know how we we landed him. Well, I don't know how we did that. You did it.
I bugged him enough and he said, sure. So it's either episode like 5 or 6 or something, but he was gracious enough to come on, you know, I mean, to talk to the last living person that had any connection to I Love Lucy was just, you know, an honor in itself, but
the last principal cast member.
It was a great, great, great guest, but
we don't know about some of those other, I mean, the other little Rickies are still living with us. Most of them. Like the Meyer twins are still around.
The babies,
I don't know about the Simmons twin. Of my reckoning, there were 7 little Rickies. So.
Oh, I wasn't aware. Well, we have to count the 7
little Rickies.
Wow. Now, the twins we didn't like are the ones that gave her a hard time with the baby.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't like that.
That weren't even twins.
That weren't even twins,
were,
that's right.
They were twins.
Yeah.
Those are the Hudson twins.
Yes, and they were the older version. I think they made a reunion.
I did a thing on twins too, and I got Teensy and Weensy in there as well.
That's right, Teensy and Weensy. That's right.
Twins are always fun on television, but they're rarely really twins. The Bordens were, but not every twin you see on television.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you so much. We could talk about this for hours. I mean, seriously. And you know, you opened up a door that we are not going to close and have you come back on. Because
for sure. Oh yeah.
If anyone can walk through an I Love Lucy episode, it's going to be you.
I probably could do it without notes, but I wouldn't trust myself.
You look on your own page.
There you go. Pull up that episode page. Yeah.
I have to be honest with you. I listened to a couple of your things. I'll say, I'll see if these people know what they're talking about. And then I realized they know what they're talking about because they're quoting me.
They're sourcing me. Definitely.
So I'm ready to write. Oh, no, that's not true. And I never can write it because you were always saying the truth because you listened to my page. That's a big ego trip for me. Sorry.
No, I love that.
Well, that's great. Well, keep listening to us because
I will.
Thank you so much. I think our community probably knows who you are. So that will be fun.
I said they'll finally put a face to the name.
Yeah, there you go.
I enjoyed 7 years of anonymity, but now I'm out.
Well,
this is paper. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye.
Good night. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Having a Ball Podcast.
You can find us everywhere. We are on Having a Ball Pod on Instagram, Having a Ball Pod on Twitter. We are on Having a Ball Podcast on Facebook and Having a Ball Podcast on YouTube. And of course, if you want to send us any emails, comments, recommendations, Having a Ball Podcast at gmail.com. Thank you guys. Bye. Bye-bye.